Hello and welcome to another episode of the Kinetic Fitness Show. This is episode number 6 and I am your host, Ali West. In today's episode, we are going to be discussing about the importance of the foot in human movement, and we are also going to be discussing barefoot running. My guest today is Dr. Emily Splickle, and Dr. Emily is a podiatrist, a human movement specialist, and she is also the founder of the Evidence-Based Fitness Academy, creator of Barefoot Training Specialist, Barefoot RX, and Bare Workout Certifications. She is the inventor of NASBO Barefoot Technology, and she has over 16 years of experience in the fitness industry. Dr. Emily Splickle has dedicated her medical career towards studying postural alignment and human movement as it relates to barefoot science, foot-to-core integration, and from the ground-up training. Today we're going to share lots of useful information, and Dr. Emily is going to share some fascinating information and some stuff that might baffle you a little bit as well, but this is going to be a fantastic episode. So without further ado, let's get stuck into it and let's find out all about the foot and barefoot running. Hello everyone. So we have today with us a very special guest, Dr. Emily Splickle, all the way from NYC, New York, and she's over in the UK, so I've managed to catch her at a very good time. Can you hear me, Dr. Emily? Everything okay today?
Yep, everything is great. I'm excited to be in, I'm actually in Brighton.
In Brighton?
Which is beautiful, yes.
Very nice. What's the weather like down there at the moment?
It's a little rainy and cooler, but being by the water, I love that because New York is obviously by the water. So anytime I'm located in that area, I love it.
Yeah, great. That's awesome. Okay, for the listeners that are listening into this podcast today, can you just give them a little bit of a backstory about you, who Dr. Emily is, what you do, and kind of your background and where you are now?
Sure. So from New York, as you had mentioned, but I am a podiatrist, was originally trained as a surgeon. So podiatrists in New York are trained as surgeons or in the U.S. However, I take a slightly different approach with podiatry. I actually am much more of a functional podiatrist, which means that I look at the entire human body, the foot, how it's connected to core stabilization, hip strength, etc. But I also take it a little bit further and I look at how foot pain or foot dysfunction is influenced by everything systemically. So whether that's inflammatory levels, stress levels, gut-brain access, mind-body connection, etc. So very holistic from how I look at pain, function, foot imbalances, etc. Also a human movement specialist, and I travel all around the world teaching other professionals about how the foot is connected to the rest of the body, again, holistically or functionally. And I am also the inventor of Noboso Technology, which is a sensory insole, sensory mat product, where my goal is to help people all around the world tap into their nervous system through the skin and the bottom of the feet.
Awesome. Lots of different angles and very holistic approach and very functional medicine based. I love that. That's really exciting.
The fascinating structure. So I love to just continuously explore it.
Yeah, brilliant. Right, today I want to really get stuck into the whole foot anatomy and the barefoot running, so to speak, because a lot of fitness-based people have maybe heard of barefoot running, maybe some haven't, and they might want to learn more about it and get into it. And from my own personal experience of human movement, biomechanics, functional movement patterns, I know that the foot is a very complex piece of equipment, so to speak. 26 bones, 33 joints, more than 100 muscles, ligaments and tendons, not to mention all of the blood vessels, nerves, skin, soft tissue, etc. But how does barefoot running work, and why is it going to benefit people? Like, what's the key concepts with barefoot running and looking at the foot?
Sure. So the first thing for all of the listeners is that when you're thinking about running, there's a couple things that you want to think about. First one is your footwear, right? So do you want to choose a more traditional running shoe that has more cushion, has what's called a heel-toe drop, which puts your foot in a slightly different position? It's usually a little bit stiffer, so it restricts some of the natural movement of the foot. And then the second thing that you want to think about with running is your strike pattern. So, you know, barefoot running as a term is a little bit misleading because some people might think that they have to literally run barefoot,
yeah,
where that's not necessarily the case. When you think about barefoot running, it's, again, are you switching your shoes to more minimal shoes? You could go completely barefoot if you want. You don't have to. And then you would be switching your strike pattern from hitting your heel first to hitting the midfoot first. So we'll kind of change the barefoot running term to be minimal shoe with a midfoot strike. Okay, so then that just all the listeners are aware that that's what we're speaking of. The advantage of switching to a more minimal shoe is that by taking away the cushion, you force your nervous system and your body to absorb the impact on its own, which some people may think of that as a high risk of injury because now you have more impact coming in. But the way that I try to get people to think about it is that minimal shoes and taking away cushion brings in stimulation that your body actually needs to control your movement patterns. So your movement patterns would be more accurate, more appropriate when you actually switch to more minimal shoes and you get rid of cushion. The other aspect of switching to minimal shoes is that you have less structure to the shoe. So if any of the listeners are familiar with Vibram or Vivo Barefoot, Nike Free, in my opinion, is too structured. So yeah, the more minimal, like Vivo Barefoot and Vibram, those are probably the best examples. You can, you know, roll the shoe up, you can wring it out like a rag, you can kind of move and twist and do all these different things because it has no structure to it. Now that allows or forces your foot to move in all different directions, which is how your foot is supposed to move. Now if you cannot control all of that movement, that could scare some people, that could, you know, increase your injury risk. So if you are going to switch to a minimal shoe with no control, you better learn how to control it.
Yeah.
That's what a lot of my programming is around, and that's really how the foot should be moving. So any of the bad reputation or some of the media that has been around, you know, increased injury risk with Vibram, Vibram just kind of got annihilated by the press, particularly in the U.S., and all of the injuries of switching to Vibram in this example had nothing to do with the shoes. It's that people were transitioning or just switching from one to the other without thinking about strengthening and recovery and gradual increase. And it was too fast, too soon.
Yeah, yeah.
And that's what led to the injuries, right? So,
like we see a lot of in fitness, people trying to do too much too soon and overdoing it without taking the necessary steps.
People go to the conclusion that that activity or that footwear or that whatever is bad then. However, it was the dosage and the transition. There's a lot of variables. You know, the body's complex, as I had said earlier. So you want to be smart about it. The one other last feature with switching your shoes is this heel-toe drop concept. So Vibram and Vivo Barefoot are considered zero drop. And zero drop was kind of mentioned a lot, you know, back in like 2009, 2010. When you have a zero drop shoe, it forces your ankle into the more natural position. Like if you were standing barefoot, you have obviously as much flexibility through your ankle as you're supposed to, or that you can. And the shoes mimic that. When you go into a traditional running shoe, you go a little bit call it a super mini high heel if you want.
Yeah.
Right? But it's a little drop, which it changes the tightness of your ankle and your Achilles tendon. Right? So that can eventually lead to compensation and injury.
Got you.
Okay. So those would be all of the advantages of switching to minimal shoes. And then you would match the minimal shoe with the midfoot strike pattern.
Yeah.
And the midfoot strike pattern means that instead of you striking your heel first, you're striking either the entire lateral or outside aspect of your foot at once, and then you kind of come down, or you're striking kind of the upper outer part of your foot. It's the ball of your foot. Or it would be like your fifth metatarsal,
yeah.
If listeners know what that means. And then you're coming down to the inside of the foot versus heel, inside, outside of foot, ball of foot, push off.
Like yeah, I've got you. Because a lot of people tend to have that overpronation running technique, don't they, where they're really rolling in on the inside.
Yeah.
And that leads to, obviously, a lot of problems further up the chain and further up the body.
Yeah, yeah. So you can avoid the overpronation element when you switch to a midfoot strike because the mechanics of the foot change slightly.
Yeah, got you. Brilliant.
So some of the biggest differences between these would be how efficient you become. Efficient is how good you use energy, I guess. So the more efficient a runner is, simplest way to explain it is that they go further on less calories, right?
Perfect.
So, and that's always the goal when it comes to running, because you don't want to get tired. If you run, you know, a kilometer and you're exhausted, clearly that's not good. So you want to go further, longer, on less energy.
That's what everyone wants. That's brilliant.
Exactly.
Okay, let's talk about some of the common issues that you see maybe with the clients, patients that you work with, or just maybe in general, what sort of problems and issues do you see time and time again?
Related to barefoot running?
Related to, yeah, maybe just to running, and people that maybe come to see you, what are the common problems they're suffering from?
Okay. I would say the biggest trend that I see, or pattern, this is just in general, not just with runners or barefoot running, etc.
Yeah.
But there's a, I don't call it an epidemic or whatnot, on people being disconnected from the ground and the environment that they move on, meaning that, and I blame it on shoes, that they are chronically delayed in their nervous system. So they're striking the ground and they're walking or they're running or they're doing any activity and foot hits the ground. Obviously, you get stimulation, but the reaction to that stimulation is delayed chronically in so many populations and people and probably every single one of my patients. And that's why we're getting injured. Any delay between the body and the ground and the stimulation coming in eventually will lead to some sort of overuse, impact, compensation, injury, whether it's in the foot, the knee, the hips, the back, it can translate up the rest of the body.
Yeah.
Now, I do honestly blame this on shoes, and putting children in shoes way too soon is one of, I'm a huge advocate around keeping babies barefoot.
Yeah.
Because that's really how the brain starts to shape, is through stimulating the skin on the feet and having that sensory information coming in. But then that can translate all the way to, you know, baby boomer and on the other end of the spectrum, that, you know, there's a reason why our feet are so sensitive. There's a reason why we have thousands of nerves in the bottom of the feet. We should continue stimulating those nerves for optimal brain function, meaning cognitive focus, memory, for emotional balance, and then, of course, for movement accuracy. So I would definitely say that everything stems from that. And then that disconnect leads to, you know, delayed activation of the glutes.
Yeah.
If your glutes are not engaging fast enough, I mean, that leads to, you know, pretty much every compensation injury. If your knee hurts, look at the glutes. If your foot hurts, look at the glutes. If your shoulder hurts, look at the glutes and look at the core.
Yeah.
And
but if the foot doesn't load properly, then the glutes are never going to load properly, are they? So
exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So it's very much connected. And I feel like some of the listeners might agree that perhaps they've had a certain injury and maybe the medical specialists have always been looking at the site of injury versus at the whole body as a unit and thinking of the movement pattern as a unit. And then they might have never looked at their foot. And intuitively, some of the listeners might be like, I know there's something going on with my foot. I think it's coming from my foot. And those are usually the patients that I see. And they're like, I need a second opinion. I need a third opinion or fourth, fifth, whatever it is, to have someone look outside the box and say, maybe the driver of my chronic low back pain is my foot. And it could be the foot from a neuromuscular perspective, meaning like it's not connecting to the ground, or it could be from a biomechanical perspective, which is the pronation that you had spoken of.
Yeah.
Right?
You just answered my next question. You just answered it. So that's brilliant. No, it's good. It's good.
So
it can be on all levels, basically. I was going to say is that when you talked about the delay, is that on a neuromuscular or biomechanical or a proprioceptive, but I'm guessing it can be on all of those different levels.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, all of them. And unfortunately, a lot of people, when they think of the foot, just because of orthotics and shoes, they go straight to like, do I have a flat foot? Am I over pronating? Do I have a high arch? And that's all that, for the most part, people think of the foot. That's why I'm on my little mission of spreading this awareness of sensory, because you could theoretically control the pronation, but they're still sensory disconnected and you're still not going to get the effect that you want.
Yes, I've got you. So looking at it on a more of a deeper, holistic level rather than just focusing maybe on the mechanics.
100%.
Awesome. That's really, yeah. Really interesting.
Yeah. And the reason, real quick, of why I tell people that's so important is when you think of movement, sensory precedes motor. So we have way more sensory nerves than motor nerves in our body.
Yeah.
Right? Before you can move a muscle or contract a muscle or move a joint, whatever, you have to have some sort of sensory come in. So there's always stimulus and then response. Right? Sensory, then motor.
Yeah.
Afferent, then efferent. So if you only look at the body as joints moving, that's like the motor aspect. You forgot the whole first part, which is required for the second part.
Yeah. That's great. Let's switch back and then talk about specifically barefoot running or minimal shoe running.
Yeah.
You spoke about a few of the misconceptions and maybe myths in inverted commas, but what are some of the common misconceptions that you find people saying to you specifically around minimal footwear and barefoot running?
I would say that they see higher injury risk with it, just because of, like I'd mentioned, some of the press that was around Vibrams primarily. And that there's a little bit of a fear of switching something, right? Especially if they're very accustomed to cushioned shoes and the traditional shoes, or they've used orthotics and they're trying to transition. So I would say that there's a higher injury risk, of course, that you can just switch.
Yeah.
You know, and suddenly just go from your heel to your midfoot and you run the exact same distance, you can't, because the stress to the body is very different and it's a skill. So when you switch to midfoot running, because most people will adopt a heel strike running, I don't know why. I mean, we don't really learn to run, we just run.
Yeah.
Okay. So, and we don't really learn to walk, we just start walking. So, but I'm a big advocate on gait training, and there's a proper way to walk. You know, most people adopt that as a child, and then unfortunately we carry heavy bags for too long. We do like you know, we sit in the car, we sit a certain way at work, we sleep a certain way, and then it just starts to change our gait, and we have no awareness to it, so we keep very subconscious in those patterns. If you run subconsciously and do what your body wants to do, quite possibly you're doing it wrong. So even if you're a heel strike runner and you want to stay a heel strike runner, I still advise all my patients to work with a running coach. Have their running pattern filmed, you know, do it on a force plate and see stride length and contact time. And there's many variables with running. So I would say, you know, you can't just switch because it's a skill. So when you switch to a midfoot strike, work with a running coach that specializes in midfoot running. Right, because the technique is a little bit different. You have to learn the technique and the awareness. You can't just go onto YouTube or Google and find a pattern and then try to mimic it.
Like okay.
You have to, you know, unfortunately, a lot of people do that.
Get a coach.
Yeah, I would say a lot of people actually think that they're midfoot running, but they're not.
That's
interesting. And I would learn that as well because I would, in the beginning, anytime I treat a runner, I always ask them, okay, what are the shoes you wear? What's your distance or your mileage? And then what is your strike pattern? I'd say 95% of my patients would say midfoot strike. And then I do a gait assessment or a running gait assessment, and they're all heel striking. And I was like, okay, I need to bring in awareness and have you work with a specific barefoot running coach to get a true midfoot strike. So that, I would say that's the other thing, that people think it's easier than it is. Right? And the thing that I'm big with when it comes to skill is first do like 5 minutes of a midfoot strike pattern, and you're just trying to get the accuracy of it, and then you have to slowly increase it. So I don't think people realize how long it takes to do the transition and to repattern your brain and body for a different strike pattern. It takes a long time.
Definitely. Especially if that person's been running that way for 20, 30, 40 years mm-hmm. of their life, it's going to take a big change and baby steps to make the change.
Yep. I would say another thing that people might not realize is that they might be really good doing a midfoot strike and then they kind of tune out or get tired and then they switch to a heel strike. So halfway through their run, they might be switching and not even realizing it.
All right. Interesting.
Yeah. And I've also seen heel strike on one side, midfoot strike on the other. So people really have to be conscious of that. And why someone would do that is if they possibly have a longer leg than the other.
Yeah.
Or the pelvis might be rotated if they have an oblique pelvis, meaning, you know, one... It's almost like it's rotated to the right or something. If people could visualize that, that's going to change if they strike heel side on one side and the midfoot on the other.
Got you.
Which that changes injury risk.
Makes sense.
Right.
Awesome. Let's talk about some solutions then to helping people. I'm sure there'll be a lot of runners listening to this and maybe just gym goers as well that want to improve their aches and pains, they want to come away from injury, or maybe even just prehab and not get injured and make themselves bulletproof, so to speak. What is your solution? Let's say I come to see Dr. Emily, I'm suffering with a back injury or a knee injury. What's the process from start maybe to finish to working with an individual? What's your solution and your process for helping somebody?
I would say in general, and then I'll try to tie in the running a little bit.
Yeah.
But in general, let's say you have a chronic injury of some sort or a compensation pattern, is one, determining your foot type. So you can do that by going to a podiatrist or to a functional, you know, movement specialist, chiropractor, whatnot. Or I have on my website, barefootstrong.com, I apologize. I have a stepwise on how you can determine your foot type. And then based off of that, you can determine, should I be in orthotics? Maybe people are in orthotics and they've always thought that they had to be in orthotics. But if they actually determine their foot type, they might realize that the orthotics were never needed. So then you would make the decision, do you want to transition out of the orthotics? And then based off of that, if you transition out of the orthotics, is it appropriate to be in more minimal shoes? Or I actually have patients go into minimal shoes to take away the cushion and the heel toe drop, but then put the orthotic in the minimal shoe, right?
Right.
So you can absolutely 100% use orthotics in a Vivo barefoot.
Got
or something,
you.
Right? So you don't have to be in like a super thick supported shoe just because you're an orthotic. You can kind of transition away from some of the elements and features of controlled footwear, which is very important. And I have some of those also. I'll send you some of the links on YouTube where I talk about choosing footwear and stuff like that. So I would say the footwear aspect is very important, understanding your foot type, and then bringing in barefoot stimulation into your lifestyle. So that could be, you know, walking around your home barefoot, or when you're at the gym, you know, start incorporating, you know, barefoot exercises into your routine. Take yoga. I mean, there's other ways to kind of build in barefoot stimulation besides just walking around your home barefoot. But if that's a way to do it, that's a way to do it. Then you want to start doing intentional foot activation. So just to walk around barefoot is not enough. You have to then put a conscious intent into strengthening the foot.
Yeah.
There's an exercise that I teach called short foot, and short foot is one of the best ways to strengthen the small muscles in the feet, which you had mentioned, all these muscles, 26 muscles, et cetera, et cetera. So strengthening the muscles in the feet through short foot can be done in the morning, in the, you know, when you're getting ready, when you're brushing your teeth, things like that, or it could be actually built into your workout when you do your squats or your body weight movements. Again, that's on my YouTube channel, the short foot exercise. It's a little bit hard to audio do it, so when someone sees it visually, it makes a lot more
yeah.
sense. And then connecting the foot to the core. So foot to core sequencing is what I call it, and it's really what I built into all of my programming through my education company and with my patients. Foot to core sequencing is essentially tying short foot, which is the activation of the foot exercise, with our core stabilizers, meaning that now your foundation or your contact point with the ground is talking to your center of gravity, which is your core.
Yeah.
Right? So for human movement, you need to have your base and your center connected or talking to each other.
Just to interrupt you there. Sorry, I didn't. Does that mean, you know, some people really struggle with core activation? They do an exercise that may be a traditional or specific core, in inverted commas, exercise, and they're like, I can't feel it. Is there a direct correlation, you're saying, with maybe a faulty foot or poor foot sensory and poor foot mechanics that's leading to their core not working properly?
Yes, 100%. So when I say core, some people might think of core different. Like, some people might think of their core as their six-pack.
Yeah.
But core, from the case of this deeper connection that I'm speaking about, is your diaphragm.
Yeah.
And your pelvic floor. So the pelvic floor has to be trained and activated. Simplest way is to say, go take Pilates,
yeah.
right? Or, you know, kind of connect through it. You can go on YouTube and find videos. But men and women both need to learn how to activate the core. So I start, when I teach classes, like group exercise classes, or for my runners or for patients, I have them, before they even start running, to lay on their back and do 5 minutes of focused, intentional core activation exercises. Those are my YouTube channel as well. And then you coordinate the pelvic floor activation exercises with the diaphragm by influencing the way that you breathe. Okay? So
breathing is critical, isn't it?
What was that?
The breathing's critical. This is something that I'm trying to coach people a lot more on, is how important the breath is. And I think that they're very similar in the fact that the breathing is something that, as human beings in our busy lifestyle, we forget about how to breathe properly. And then what we're talking about today, people forget about their feet and to look after them as well. So it's interesting that you mentioned the breathing, because I think it's all linked.
Yes, 100%. So from the simplest way to explain it, activating your foot, or short foot, is essentially pushing your toes into the ground. Okay? Almost like grounding or anchoring the digits down. Okay? So the way that I teach it is, as you push your toes into the ground or anchor yourself, you exhale and you lift your pelvic floor. Right? So that activation or connection essentially gets the core as a whole, or diaphragm, pelvic floor, foot, all online with each other. You can take that even further, because everything, you can just keep going further and further. You can go into your core, actually connects to your tongue, so you can push your tongue into the roof of your mouth. So, or you can stick out your tongue, but I feel like that's not appropriate. So you would want to put the tongue into the roof of the mouth. And probably the best way to, for listeners to understand that or to think about it, is if you Google, or if you remember pictures of Michael Jordan, and whenever he would take a shot, he would always stick his tongue out. And you'll actually see that with a lot of high-performing athletes. Google gymnasts as well. Gymnasts will also incorporate that as well, and you'll see a lot of pictures where gymnasts are doing high performance skills, obviously, and their tongue is sticking out at certain points. So the tongue and the ligaments going into the tongue go down into your deep core muscles. And oddly, not to make this too complex, but whatever, we went down the rabbit hole.
That's good. Keep going.
Your tongue is linked to the brain, and it stimulates your brain. So it kind of gets everything online, because to move, you have to have your brain stimulated, right? So it gets everything kind of online.
Yeah.
So I actually use this foot, pelvic floor, diaphragm, tongue pathway to activate the brain when you're trying to focus. So it's also like, it's a way to activate or wake up the brain. But for movement, it's the same thing.
That's fascinating. Absolutely fascinating. It makes me think as well and relate to, I'm really big into my meditation, and a lot of the stuff that you've just mentioned there is undertaken in meditation practice as well. So putting your feet on the floor, tucking the diaphragm and pelvis in, breathing deep, tongue on the roof of your mouth. So it's all linked.
There you go. I love it.
Brilliant. Let's talk about the benefit. I know you've mentioned loads of kind of different things that are going to happen once we start to look after our feet, integrate barefoot running or minimalistic shoes and moving around barefoot as well. But what kind of short-term effects and benefits will people see almost straight away? And then what about medium and long-term as well, once they switch to more barefoot movement?
Yes. So immediately, if someone does, you know, 5 minutes of this foot to core before they go running, we'll say, or before a workout, they'll actually notice that they feel more connected with their body. They feel more stable. Most people say that they feel their glutes more. So that's, you know, one of the most immediate ones. They might feel stronger, you know, just because they're more stable, they're going to be stronger. So I would say that. Maybe they feel less, you know, some tweak in the knee when they do a certain movement. That might go away. So I would say those are the most short-term immediate, and then the longer term is you can actually notice a change in your foot shape, which is great. You can notice that you, you know, take away some of the overpronation, you neutralize the rear foot, you lift your arch. All of those are positive because they create opposite rotations in the leg, which means your pelvis is now more stable, your hips are more stable. So that's great. From a chronic pain perspective, they might feel that it took away their, you know, knee pain that they've had for 5 years and nothing else has helped. So I would say from a longer term, it progresses to just more chronic issues and to alignment issues that you will also see from the short term. But the short term would be, you know, obviously when I do that squat right now, I feel less pain.
Yeah. So postural, the posture is going to improve over time as well.
Mm-hmm.
Great. What about you personally then, Dr. Emily? How has barefoot movement, barefoot running benefited you personally? I know it's obviously your job and your livelihood, but how have you used it personally and what results have you seen from this practice and what you've undertaken?
Yeah, so I'm actually, well, I was a gymnast for 13 years, so I was always barefoot. So I always had this appreciation for the integration of the body. Perhaps I would have gone even further had I known some of this stuff.
Yeah.
So, right? I mean, it was spoken in gymnastics, and this concept of tension I speak in my workshops is, you know, you engage the pelvic floor, that's called tension. We would use that in gymnastics, but not as focused as I teach it now. So I wish I had more of that focus, deeper science. Perhaps when I was 10, I wouldn't get it. But, you know, I brought that always into my practice now. So I've always been a barefoot mover. However, the deeper coordination of diaphragm, pelvic floor, and the timing of those, I've used those and really researched those after I had my own injury. After gymnastics, I became a competitive cyclist, and I did track cycling, the velodrome, so like really fast, kind of, you know, hip-driven, anterior hip-driven movement patterns.
Yeah.
And I experienced what's called a sports hernia. I don't know if you know
what that is.
Some of the listeners may or may not. Or athletic pubalgia. Essentially, you tear the fascia or the covering of your rectus abdominis. And it's because of underactive pelvic floor, you become very strong in the muscle in your adductors and the muscle, like the big muscles on the front of your leg, whereas the little muscles in your core start to weaken and then they get dominated by these anterior muscles. So cycling is just like prevalent with this compensation pattern. And when I had that injury, all of the doctors were like, we think it's your labrum, it's this, we, you know, that's an injury for men, women don't get that injury. Like, it was very kind of, I was given the runaround.
Wishy-washy.
What was that?
Wishy-washy.
Yeah, and I was like, okay, I think this is from a chronic pattern, not an acute. I'm not a hockey player. Sorry, I didn't, like, go for a slap shot and tear my adductor. But the presentation is very similar. So I did my whole research, found a doctor, got a different MRI, saw the tear, did surgery, fixed the tear. Long story short, it threw my muscles into a spasm because even though the tear was fixed surgically, the patterning wasn't fixed. And all of the physical therapists and you know, professionals that I was seeing weren't approaching it from the way that I just described to you, right, about the small muscles in the feet, the pelvic floor, the breathing, the diaphragm, like all of that stuff. So then I was like, I understand the body. Let me explore. And then I kind of started getting into this, met some other amazing professionals and who are now mentors and really good friends. And they started showing me this different aspect of looking at the human body. And that's what I did. And I'd have to roll out my adductors, get them to shut off. And then I'd activate my pelvic floor, and that was it. And I'd have to do that like 5 times a day, super slowly, very, very slow return to to activity. Post-surgery, I couldn't even run across the street to not get hit by a car for 9 months.
Wow.
I mean, that's how I couldn't sit for more than 30 minutes without going into spasm. I couldn't stand for too long. I couldn't. So you imagine how this was like massively debilitating and emotionally what that can do to a person.
Yeah.
So, I mean, that's really what kind of led to this exploration and why I now travel the world sharing this approach. And I've been able to teach other professionals and doctors and movement specialists how to use this technique on their patients. And it's been able to help thousands and thousands of people, which that makes me happy.
That's amazing. Absolutely brilliant. I love that. And that's what I'm trying to do as well, help as many people as I can to live healthier, move better, feel better, live longer. So the fact that you're sharing that and that's resonating and translating to so many people is fantastic.
Yeah, I think there's a book that's called The Gift of Adversity that you might actually really like. And
I'll check it out.
It speaks about, obviously, we all have these like downtime, certain injuries. Like, what can you learn from injury, right? And clearly I learned this different approach through my injury, and that's actually changed and shaped the way I practice medicine, which I would not be practicing this way had I not had that injury, or most likely would not be practicing this way.
Yeah.
So it's really interesting.
So something great came out of something not so great.
Yeah, exactly. That's always the case.
Yeah, definitely. Same with myself. I mean, my soccer, football, however you want to call it, career ended when I was sort of 18 through an ACL tear, and then that's what pushed me into fitness and then going into human movement and biomechanics off the back of an injury as well. So very similar.
Yep. You have to use that injury for a positive, whether it's for yourself or to spread that message with others then, which is great.
Definitely. Well, I think for today, I've got most of the stuff that I wanted to get from you. I could obviously go on, and I'd love to carry on speaking and picking your brain, but we've kind of done 45 minutes or so here, so, and I know you're very busy, you've got a lot to do. So where can listeners go to find out more about you, such as website, YouTube? I know you've mentioned YouTube a lot. Can you just tell them so they can go and find out more about you and what you do?
Absolutely. So my education company is EBFA Global. So B as in boy, F as in Frank. So EBFA Global. So it's EBFAGlobal.com. The YouTube channel links off of that, or they could go to YouTube.com/EBFAFitness. And then there's probably way more videos than they may want on there. And then I also have barefootstrong.com that I had mentioned, barefootstrongblog.com. And my medical practice website is DREMILYSPLICHAL.com. So it's just my name, Dr. Emily Splickle.com.
Brilliant.
And all the social channels, Instagram, Twitter, Facebook, YouTube, LinkedIn.
Yeah. I'll put a link to all of these links in the show notes that I add on to the bottom of the podcast. But thanks for reeling those off as well. And there's plenty of information out there for the listeners to go and grab. I've actually watched quite a few of your videos, and they're really, really good. So I highly recommend people going and checking out the YouTube videos, particularly the ones if you are a runner. You've got a whole series, haven't you, of run injury free, is it?
So the run injury free I actually made for my patients. So the listeners will probably really like that playlist. But then there's the other one that's kind of for consumers or patients would be, I think it's How to Be Barefoot Strong with Dr. Emily or something like that. It's where I'm explaining shoes and how to release the foot. And think of them more like video blogs.
Yeah.
And then the other ones are, they're a little bit more intended for professionals, because they're webinars, so they're educational.
Okay.
But for sure, 100%, you know, the patients and listeners can listen to those. Some of it might be beyond or more in depth or detail than they ever wanted. Or it might just really empower them, which is my intent. I speak to my patients the same way I do the professionals. I have a very high expectation. I don't talk down to my patients. Sometimes people think I got to keep it super light. My patient won't understand. That's not how I expect it.
Yeah.
I demand a lot from my patients.
So you should.
Yeah, absolutely.
Awesome. We always finish my podcasts and my shows with an inspirational quote or a motivational quote. I hope you've got one ready or you've got one in your mind. But just something that maybe you live by, or something that motivates you, inspires you, a quote. And it could be one of your own or it could be from someone else, just to finish the show with.
Oh.
Put you on the spot.
Yes, that put me on the spot. I would say that the quote is not exactly a quote, but I believe in the philosophy of, actually, no, this is this quote. I believe it's Mark Twain. The two most important days of your life are the day that you're born and the day that you find out why.
Love it. I've heard that one. That's brilliant.
Yeah.
Brilliant. I've loved it. Thank you so much for your time. And I really appreciate you speaking to me today and sharing your knowledge and wisdom. And I really appreciate it. Thank you so much.
Of course. It was a pleasure and was an honor.
Thank you. That's it for today. We're going to wrap it up right there. I want to say thank you. And thanks to the guys that are listening, have listened in, that will be listening. And that's a wrap for today. That's a wrap for another episode of the Kinetic Fitness Show. What an amazing podcast that was. Fascinating information there that Dr. Emily shared with us. And I hope you've took some useful information and useful knowledge away from today's show. As always, if you need any help with any of the topics that we've spoke about today or anything related to your health and well-being and fitness, do not hesitate to get in touch with me. My email is ali.west@kineticfitness.co.uk, and kinetic is spelled K-I-N-E-T-I-K. You can get me on Instagram on both of my handles, our Kinetic business page and my personal Kinetic Instagram as well. All those handles and links are in the description of this podcast. So that's it. That's another wrap. And I look forward to speaking to you again next week. Take care, peace and love, and I will speak to you again soon.